Mr. James, reel four. Right, Mr. James, just continue. Forbes wanted you to stay.
So he said, well, you know, I could put you in reserve occupation. No, I want to go, sir. I've got to go. I said, there's nothing I want more now. So he said, well, we should be very sorry to lose you, James. I don't know what I'm going to do to find somebody else to do the job you're doing, because we had rows of houses in Royal Park, Rippersmouth for sale, Moraine.
Mm-hmm.
Rows of houses in Northwood that had gone for 50 euros, and sold a whole lot in Rippersmouth. And, you know, they built, and this was, the war had just started. Eventually, I heard the government took over all those houses and put in refugees from London, from the east end of London, into them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. But I...
Can you remember what Mr. Forbes thought about the outbreak of the war? What his view?
Well, I think he was an old army officer himself, you know. And I know that he had sons that were probably already in the TA. I think myself that he was well-bridged. He was not very far from retirement, either. I think that he did better more than I did. That, you know, this war this has been brewing for all through the 37, 38, 39. He knew what was going to happen. As well as if I had the insight into it, I'm sure that he did. Because every young man eventually sort of was talking about it, you know. I was away from home. I had a very lean time. I honestly did. I had no holiday to pay. I hadn't seen my brothers and sisters. And I still didn't see them before I went into the army. I went into the beds and hearts.
Yeah. Just backtrack a little bit, Mr. James. So there's this delay between volunteering and being called to the beds and hearts. And obviously during this period was the so-called phony war, where not much was happening.
Yeah.
Any impressions of London and life in London at that time? Obviously, everything was starting to gear up for the war. There'd be soldiers everywhere.
That's right.
Just any impressions of that?
It was the phony war. And then, you know, there was nothing happening. There was the BEF. And they were sending over there the what army we had along to France. There, the French were boasting about their national line, which is supposed to be impregnable, which was some white elephant. I mean, it didn't do anything, didn't stop the Germans at all. It bypassed. Phony wasn't the word.
Did you have any friends that were, because you had a friend that went into the Royal Artillery, did you have any friends that went to France at this time, or anybody that you knew? Or?
No, well, I mean, I'd heard in letters from home about certain chaps who were in the army as well. Who were in the BEF, you know. I'd heard about the happenings of well-known names to me, but no, I didn't have anybody that I knew who was there. And I thought, well, I've got a lot of training first before I'm sent over there. And yet, I don't think chaps did have a lot of training. I've since learned that there were some chaps sent to the BEF for maybe about 3 months training. You know, I mean, talking to blokes in life after. But the ones who were over there were supposed to be our regular soldiers. And we had great faith in them. But my God, we, as compared to the German army, we hadn't learned battle.
But we'll get onto that in a little while, Mr. James. Your employer was resistant to your leaving.
He wanted to talk me. He wanted to keep me because I knew that he'd find it difficult to replace me.
So just talk us through your last days of employment and your first day of in the army. Just thought that link between the two. What was going on? What was happening in your life?
No, I think that I was elated. Actually, I was elated. I was saying to my landlady, "I'm looking forward to going." You know, I hope there's no snags. And she had another lodger who was a building foreman. Snags? Of course, there'd be no snags. How old are you?
Well, I said, 29.
Young man like you?
Yeah.
He said, you were the bloke. He said, was there the same group? He said, you chaps, you 20-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, of course there'll be no snags. I said, what snags can there be? I said, I don't know. I said, I hope. I'm going to be a sergeant. That was my aim. I said, if I go in now, I'm going to try for promotion. The army is bound to expand. I saw that we had a peacetime army.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that when a war starts, I knew that the army is bound to expand and that there would be quick promotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going for it.
Mm-hmm. So, between your medical with the Welsh Guards and so on, you went to...
I was still in Rittenberg.
Yeah.
I was still plodding on.
But you to talk us through your approach to the Beds and Hearts, how that worked.
Oh, yeah, well, the local regiment, I was told, was the Beds and Hearts. The depot was in Bedford. I was told that in Rickmansworth, most of the Rickmansworth men in the First World War served in the Beds and Hearts as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the county regiment. And I wouldn't venture to Bedford, which I thought was a long way away, really, for somebody with no transport in Rickmansworth.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really elated, happy that this period of working away from home as a civilian was over. The penury that I suffered was indescribable,
mm-hmm.
because it was penury.
Mm-hmm.
And you just had no opportunities at all. You had no holiday to pay. They kept the young people down with wages. They thought they didn't deserve wages in those days.
Mm-hmm.
These days, it amazes me, with young girls now leaving school at 17 and 18 and training as secretaries, are paid 16 and 20,000 a year to trot up typists these days.
Mm-hmm.
And all the opportunities are going now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in those days, it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it was... Well, I wasn't the only one away from Wales. There were thousands of us.
Mm.
Thousands of us.
Mm.
We used to meet each other in Watford, you know, German with the accent, from the north, Sunderland, Geordieland, Wales. We were all in the same boat.
Mm. Mm.
And
so you've decided to join the Beds and Hearts.
Yeah.
Go through the mechanics of how...
Well, I was waiting with great patience for my calling up. Day and it came.
But how did you actually sign up for the Beds and Hearts? Make contact with the Welsh Guards?
As far as I can remember, I had the interview in Rickmansworth.
Mm-hmm.
There was this.
There
was this government office, and it was a conscription office, which
mm-hmm.
was set up in every town.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a notice to call there, and they said that they had mine. Information about the great St. Albans, that I wanted to join the Welsh Guards, and I was told they were that I couldn't do that. They thought that maybe there were other arms of the service that perhaps I should be going into, and they questioned me about that. But eventually, they thought that the real soldier and the one who was needed the most was the infantryman.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, and so I remember particularly telling my boss and telling everybody, the workers as well, that I was going into the Beds and Hearts. And they all said, good God, I'm surprised about that. Even the workmen and the plasterers.
Mm-hmm.
You're a silly bugger, you are. You would have gone into the Intelligence Corps or the Royal Engineers or the RASC, but not the infantry. I said, why? Well, I said, you know, this is a piping soldier. I said, they said, yes, I know, but everybody tries to dodge the infantry. I said, yeah, well, I didn't want to wait them because I wanted to be the best guy straight away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you're all in it and more. Yes, I know, but they're easier. Regiments that the infantry, they were all saying, you know.
Mm, 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 mm.
And they were aghast that I was going into the beds of hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was.
So you were signed up in Rickmansworth.
It was.
And then
right.
You got a notification.
That's right. And mm-hmm. I was told they gave me about a fortnight or 3 weeks. I was told to report to the IPC Kempston during the day of the 15th of January 1940.
Mm-hmm.
And that the warrant is here, you go to Bedford, you'll be met at Bedford John St. John's Station by a score of NCOs who are meeting every train. And they will pick you up on the platform
mm-hmm.
at Bedford when you arrive.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was.
Mm-hmm.
I arrived at, on the way, as I say, through Watford Junction, and I sent my case home to my mother. And I went to Bedford. I said goodbye to Mrs. Whittington. She said, I know, she said, that Bedford's a long way from Wales. You can always come back and see me here, my love. So I never did. And I went to picked up by Corporal Sears, a bloke who'd been in India for years and years, with a big scar down his cheek,
mm-hmm.
and he was a son.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Right, you lot here. Now I know you can't bloody do it. You try and get formed up in the frieze here, and carry your suitcases. And I want you to walk, to march." With me about 2 miles to the ITC. So there we were, a motley crowd of about 50 of us on this train,
because
the trains were coming in all day. And he picked us up. He was a real soldier, he was, with the Northwest Frontier Medals. And he marched us, and said, "You must have bloody been told in school, left, right, left, right. Try and keep the pace, you can move better," he said.
Mm-hmm.
But we were rabble, and we went, and people watched us in Bedford, the whole town, people lying on the pavements thinking poor buggers. And we were marching up to the, through Bedford and up the hill. We saw a red castellated building on our left,
mm-hmm.
which looked like a Victorian prison.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Left wheel," and then we went through these gates, and that was it. 15th of January 1940.
So take us through that day. You're inside the castle, your civilians.
Well, I got in there. We were sent, handled by teams waiting for us. We were taken down to the quartermaster's store immediately. And we were given uniforms and this, that, and the other.
Did they fit?
Yeah, and all the kit and everything else. And we were told to sort of stand there with your bundle and sign for it. And I remember looking at the assistants behind, and the first bloke I saw there was this bloke called Bickmore. And I've told you about Bickmore before.
Yes, off the chair.
He was tattooed all over.
Mm-hmm.
And he was giving out the clobber.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, "Don't go yet, you've got to have a bit of string around your neck, and you've got to have your 2 identity discs, one round and red, and one oblong and green. And you'll be buried with one should you become a casualty. And they will know who you are if they dig you up."
Mm.
And they gave us our army numbers there and then.
And what was yours?
595. Bang, 0427. 595-0427. I thought it was that. Well, 595 is a regimental first three numbers.
Mm-hmm.
0427 adds up to 13. And I thought to myself, well, I'm hoping I'll be lucky. And that's been my number. And he said, "Always wear this bit of string around your neck."
Mm-hmm.
These two. And I did, all through the war. I've mm-hmm. still got them.
Yeah, yeah. So that's your kind of induction into the army. What happened next?
Well, the barracks was teeming with civvies arriving all day long. We were taken down to a hut. I thought that we'd be in this lovely big building, which was an enormous big Victorian building. I think the barracks must have been built about 1850, something like that, in the Crimean War. But no, they had put up scores of wooden huts at the bottom of the parade ground for the likes of us.
Mm.
And I was in 39 squad, hut 13. And I thought, good God, 3 13s are 39, 13 is my number.
Mm.
And in hat 39, 39 squad, there we were, this big wooden hut, which was newly constructed, with a great big stove in the middle of it, tall with a tortoise top, you know, mm. and a big black pipe going up from the roof. And we had beds down there, and our long wooden hut, and that was where we were living.
Mm. Outside
the bottom, at the bottom of the wooden hut were the ablutions,
mm.
and annexed to the wooden hut, still on the come up, where there were rows of zinc sinks and taps and, you know, and open drains and cold water.
Mm.
And there was January of the 15th, 1940.
And how many men would be in the hut?
Sorry?
How many men would be in the hut?
Well, in this hut, there must have been about 20 down this side, about 40 of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the weather was terrible. It was the worst winter I've ever known.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were in this hut. It was cold. We had snow. And we'd been kicked out, and we were near the army. Dogs were crying their eyes out all night, every night.
Mm. And you remember any impressions of your fellow recruits?
Oh yes,
I what kind of men they were? If you could go through some of them.
In this hut, well, you know, we were all in the same boat, but there were two blokes who had volunteered from Markgate in Hertfordshire. One was called Sol, that was his nickname, and he was a short bloke, drunk, and his mate was from the village as well, of Markgate, and I don't know what his name was, I forget it now, but anyway, I remember those two.
Mm-hmm. And did you make any friends in this initial period?
Huh?
Did you make any friends in this initial period?
Yeah, we were all already committed to comradeship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I suppose something is like prisoners in prison.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter what you've done, you're in it. Mm-hmm. So here we are, this is what we're going to live here. So they signed up about, I don't know how or when, they were drunk. And they were in the hut. Mm-hmm. They couldn't read, they couldn't write. They asked me to write a letter to their family to say they joined the army.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a letter for them, which I read it to them. They dictated it. And I wrote countless letters for them during the whole time I was in the hut.
Mm-hmm.
These two characters from Markgate. Well, the Markgate is not very far north of St. Albans.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the way on an old Dunstable from St. Albans, but they were from there, Markgate.
Never. What about your other fellow recruits?
Fellow recruits. And there was one there. Who's cut from Luton. And his name was Cain. C-A-I-N. And his mother kept a big pub in Luton called the Blockers Arms. Now the Blockers in Luton, the hat makers. And he must have been her only son, Peter Cain. And his mother used to come down with a very good Rolls Royce on a Sunday to try to find him. And, you know, and sort of accompany him, take him to the local hotel or whatever for the afternoon, the rest of the day. And he used to cry his eyes out every night.
Mm.
And not only him, but other blokes as well, couldn't take to it. They were, to them it was hell. Mm. To me, it was heaven. I loved it. Mm. I had security for the first time in 4 years. I had 2 pairs of navy boots, 2 pairs of underpants, which I never had before. I had an overcoat, the first overcoat in my life. Undervest, wooden vest, good grub. I'd already had seconds. Liver and bacon, I think, was the big tray. And gravy, you know, with the first meal in this afternoon. And I had 2 of those. And there were 8 years girls serving the food in the big, enormous dining hall. Of course, it was chaotic. It was all sort of day one for all these recruits. But I loved it. And I felt happy. Settled. I was able to do things.
So you're there. You've got your first night. You'll have been assigned like NCOs. Do you remember anything about the your training?
No, we had been settled in for that day, and then the next day, Corporal Sears, the broker of the skull, came and he says, "I'm your platoon corporal." He said, "And I'm a disciplinarian. I'm a regular soldier, and it's my job," he says, "to see that you are going to be made soldiers as quickly as possible." He said, "I'm going to drill you on the square. I'm going to teach you how to shoot. I'm going to teach you fieldcraft. I'm going to teach you all you're going to know. And it's got to be done in quick time because the army needs you." He was such a disciplinarian that you dared ask him, "Could you fall out of dual P?" His answer would be no. And he was a pig. He was really. I'm saying to myself, he was a pig. He had no compassion. He was a bully. There was one of the recruits who had a faint colour. He was a Burmese. He wasn't Negro, he wasn't Indian, he was a Burmese. And he came from a very wealthy family because he had a big ring on his finger with an opal in it. And he was educated as well. His name was Morris. Because he was coloured, there was no colour prejudice at all, and none in my mind, he tagged on to me, and we went out together walking down in the town to go and have a half a pint and whatnot. And at night time, maybe we were three. And I liked the bloke. And he was one of us. After all, he was a soldier. Morris, and he had to be in it. And one day on parade, this Corporal Sears, we were all in parade, and all was like Morris as well. He was the only kind of one. He said, "Stand still, you black bastard!" Morris said, "What do you call me?" He broke ranks. "Why did you call me?" And he broke out and went forward. He was going to attack the corporal. And he was restrained and he was put in the jug. I've never forgotten that.
And what happened to him after that?
Well, he was in the jug and he was under arrest for quite a while. And we were all sympathetic. But of course, we were all reticent. We didn't say that we didn't want to be involved, but we were on his side. And I think he was given, he was tried from the ITC cells, and he was confined to barracks for 14 days and stopped pay. But he was never the same bloke. And Corporal Sears never called him a black bastard again either. But we had this Corporal Sears for a long time.
Yeah. So, say the day after you're inducted, could you just take us through a typical day as you were being trained?
Yes. What time would you?
What time would you be woken up and just go through the whole thing?
Right, the valley. We were told that the bugle would blow at 6 a.m. in the January morning in the ITC, And you've got to learn the miracles. So they told us that the core milieu, first thing in the morning, would be the Ravani. And it would be the long Ravani.
Mm. Can you remember what it went like?
Oh, yes, I don't forget it. Yes. Charlie, Charlie. Da 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 da. If you sit in bed with that last nurse out there, there'd be dead CO in there. And you'd be for it. You'd be out of bed as soon as you had the first note of the valley. And you'd get down to the ablutions to sort of wash and shave. You'd come back and you'd put your blankets up, fold it, make it look nice.
Could you describe that?
That's yeah, the three blankets. You had to fold them so that they were about a yard, 2 foot 6 wide by about 15 inches, and you had to put them three one top of the other, and the fourth one around it like that, a cover around it, so that they were they're there on your mattress at the top of the bed, looking very, very neat indeed.
And that had to be done every morning?
Every morning.
And would that be inspected by the corporal?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and all your rubbish as well, between your kit bag and away, and everything would be nice. Mm-hmm. And the second pair of boots at the bottom of the bed, polished and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But at this time, as time went on...
No, keep into the routine, Mr. James. So that's the opening...
Yes. We began to realise that Rivani was really purgatory. And that we had to get up quick.
And so you're
caught in bed.
Was anybody caught in bed to start with?
There were lance corporals. There were one stripers. They were in straight away.
And who would that be?
And they wanted to catch somebody because they wanted promotion. Mm-hmm.
And do you have any instances where they would catch anybody in those early days? Any instances of how they would catch people or bully them in the early days?
We had to respect the one stripers as well, the lance corporals. I mean, realizing as well that, of course, the duties to them were delegated by Corporal Sears. And he must have been a good instructor, he knew his stuff, I must say, because he had us on parade on the back square with full packs, and we'd be marching all day. Neck, right, get your shoulders back, you know. Right, up, turn, and right, turning. And anybody who was, you know, you stupid bundle up man, why didn't you listen to me, you know? So, anyway, it was really a real army. And we'd get away from as well. And you'd sweat, and you'd feel the sweat run down your back. And every 45 minutes, right, fall out for a fag.